This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's time for Pitch Hit and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Give the kids in your community a chance to flex their superpowers, and they could earn a trip to the national finals of the 2025 World Series presented by Capital One. So go ahead, be the one who powers their dreams, and sign up to host the local Pitch Hit and Run event. It's a free and fun way to promote baseball, softball, and your organization. To learn more, go to pitchhitrun.com.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Okay, so we get the coordinators, the media does, on Thursdays. So I know, like, the process should be, you know, by Tuesday we flush the previous game and we're on to New England. And generally speaking, we are. But unfortunately, we don't get to hear from Bobby Slowik or Matt Burke or Frank Ross until Thursday. Yeah. So I'm curious some of their thoughts on some of the things that happened on Sunday, especially in a close game against a good team where there were a lot of little micro decisions to be made in that game that impacted or could have negatively impacted the outcome of the game for the Texans. And so Bobby, and the big one, I think, for Bobby Slowik was some of the play calling decision making down the stretch in that game, yeah, where the Texans, with under a minute to go, had the ball in Kaimi Fairbairn's field goal range, which is basically in the building. If he's anywhere in the building, he can kick a field goal. But they had it like at the 36-yard line of Buffalo. They were in position to kick a game-winning field goal, and it's third down. And if you just – conventional wisdom was, well, you just run the football here. You got all your timeouts.
They're on the 39-yard line.
39, okay.
So at that point –
it's about a 57-yard field goal would be.
Yeah, 56 or 50. Yeah, 57-yard field goal.
Yeah.
And that's the key. The key thing is, okay, 39-yard line. It's a 56-yard field goal. What do you do there? Do you just run? You need time to expire. You know, like what do you do? And Bobby Slowik chose to pass. They didn't execute it properly, yeah, and CJ gets an intentional grounding,
which pushes him back 10 yards. They, yeah, lose the down, so you don't. It's not third down again. Now it's fourth down. Now you got to punt the football. Now, fortunately, they got the ball back, and we all know how it ended. They end up winning the game anyways, despite that poor execution or poor play call, depending on how you look at it. Maybe both.
Well, it was miscommunication there, and somebody that was supposed to be there wasn't there yet.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah.
So here's Bobby Slowik yesterday on the decision making at the end of the Buffalo game.
We shouldn't ever get a grounding call there, so that starts with me. Like, I got to just do a better job at communicating to everybody what we're trying to get done. Like, that can't happen in that. We prided ourselves on we work situations all the time. And for a year and a half, I'd say we're a good situational football team. I think that's shown itself in how we handle 2 minutes. We're very good 2-minute offense. More of that is situations than anything. Like, people think it's going on the ball. A lot of 2-minute, you're not going on the ball at all. It's just handling situations when they come up. But as it pertains to that specific one, you know, like I would look at that similar to the end of the half at Indy. Like, I botched that one. You know, there's schematically, you're expecting them to try to knock you out of field goal range. So you're pretty confident most coordinators in the NFL are going to all out pressure you. So the run game as a starting point, you have to feel confident if you call a run, at the very least, you're not losing 3 yards. Because that's, you know, it's risky when they're bringing everybody. Now there's ways we can definitely make that happen, and then in the pass game, obviously, we got to be able to go execute.
So in that moment, what they're really thinking is, okay, it's a 56-yard field goal. If we run the ball here, yes, we're going to definitely soak some time up, but there's also a really good chance, especially given our ability to run the ball, that it's going to be a tackle for a 3-yard loss.
Right, it's going to turn into, like, a 60-yard field goal.
Like so many plays have been in recent memory. So you dial up something that you think is at least an easy completion, and maybe you get some extra yardage out of it, but at the very least, you don't actually go backwards again. So I'm a little bit more... It's frustrating because philosophically it makes sense, and yet you're hamstrung by your inability to even just run for a stalemate right there.
Yeah.
Okay, great. If it's a zero blitz, then so be it. But there's teams that can still at least expect to get a stalemate there.
Yeah.
That he chose the less evil option there, and it ended up being the absolute worst. It sounds like he was saying at the end of the Colts game, or end of the first half of the Colts, where everything got all screwed up, okay, I botched that, but in this, I feel like he stands by his decision to pass there. They just got to execute it better.
Yeah, it's been an interesting year, season for the Texans for end of half and end of game situations. I feel like there's been no in between. They've either executed them flawlessly or they've done just some crazy, odd, weird things, whether it's a singular play like that one we're talking about now, whether it's just a misunderstanding or botching of a situation like it was at the end of the half against the Colts, or for me, the general approach at the end of halves is something I think D'Amico is more conservative at the end of halves than I would like him to be. It's just a philosophical disagreement on my behalf. And yet there have been times at the end again. I mean, look, the end of the Buffalo game, they only had to execute one play, but they did it fine. They set Kiami up. The end of the last drive of the Jacksonville game was a masterpiece. The way they emptied the timeouts of the Jags while still going down and scoring a touchdown was amazing.
I mean, a lot of that, it's tough because when it does work well, it looks like, oh, yeah, that's the master. But when it doesn't work out, it feels like, oh, you guys are so conservative. You're so, how are you doing this? And yet, all those examples where they do suck the clock down and take a possession away from the other team, that's part of it. Is they're driving down the field at the end of a half. Part of their philosophy is, all right, we want to be sure we take a possession away from these guys. They don't have a realistic chance to score at the end because you only get 12 possessions in a game. If you can steal a possession from a team, that's a big, big deal. And I think they look at that as a bit of a victory too. Whether the Texans score points or not, they're trying to walk that fine line. And it's frustrating because you're greedy in the moment. You want points, damn it.
Yep. Well, and I think especially too when you get the ball, talking about the end of half stuff, when you get the ball to start the second half, also that factors in. Like, okay, let's go get some points, make sure they don't get the ball at all, and plus we get the ball. We're getting two possessions in a row here.
And we're keeping them off the field for like an actual 45 minutes to an hour of actual real time.
Yeah,
but so with Bobby, this is where I'm torn with him because I love his press conferences. I think it's very obvious and evident that he has a really deep level of understanding of the game.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, though, he'll be saying things that I 100% agree with, and they are 100% true, and yet I don't like it. Because at the end of the day, it's all without substance if you can't actually execute all of this highfalutin philosophy that you're talking about.
Yep.
You know what it feels like, I guess? It feels most like when a new basketball coach takes over, Udoka, for instance, and you have to start, you're trying to do the basics, and you've got a philosophical belief that you want to get good at doing these certain things. And sometimes you got to take two steps backwards to take three steps forward with all of that, and it feels frustrating and plodding. And yet the vision is like you got to do all this boring bad stuff to get to where your vision is. That's where Bobby Slowik is with the run game right now. And I think it's that there's part of you that wants to say, just let CJ cook. There's just sit back there and gun and go. But the vision is that you've got a well-constructed offense where the run game and the pass game are tied together and they complement each other, and they're just not there yet because they can't execute in the run game, and it screws everything else all up.
Yeah, I think the other thing to point out there, too, because we have people texting in, just take a knee. Why not just take a knee then? And if you're worried about losing yard, well, for one, if you take a knee, you do lose a yard. I think the other thing, we're getting a little – we're starting to take maybe Kiami Fairbairn a little bit for granted as well. It was a 56-yard field goal. They're also trying to gain 4 or 5 yards there to make the field goal a little bit easier. Like, that was the purpose of passing the ball there, was to try to pick up some extra yardage to make life easier for Kiami Fairbairn. We can't live in a world, people, where, I get it, they had to set up a 59-yarder at the end of the game because they had no time left. That was just what you were dealing. You had 7 seconds. And you had to move the ball as many yards as you could and still have time on the clock for the final field goal. But we can't have it. What people are saying, take a knee or just run the ball into the line or whatever. Like, you can't play for a 56-yard field. I know Kaimi's really, really good. The two things that I feel like, you and I had this conversation off air a little earlier. The two things that I feel like we're starting to take for granted a little bit as Texan fans. One, Kaimi Fairbairn's ability to bang a field goal from anywhere inside 60 yards. And two, like, this is real. What Kaimi is doing this year is freaking amazing. He's got 8 50-plus yard field goals. He's got 2 59-yarders, including one at the gun to win the game last Sunday. The other thing we're starting to take for granted a little bit is CJ Stroud's right arm and just how ridiculously accurate he is under duress and how easy it is. And I'll use last night's game as an example. In the second half of that game, Brock Purdy was awesome in the first half. In the second half, he wasn't as good. He wasn't as accurate. He was missing what looked to me to be easy throws. And I would rewind and I go, okay, was that an easy throw? Or do I think that's an easy throw because I watch CJ Stroud every week?
You know? Well, then even, somebody
who makes everything look easy. CJ.
I was talking to somebody who was talking about the Texans receivers and they were saying like, well, it just seems like they get a lot of separation and they're just so open. And some of that is that because CJ throws with such good anticipation and because he has such good ball placement. Like I did that cut up yesterday of Stephon Diggs. It was the receptions this season that Stephon Diggs has had while CJ Stroud is under pressure. And it does. Every single one of them, it looks like, wow, look at how much room there is. But so many of them are either late in the down where CJ's had to scramble and create some time, or it's that CJ gets rid of the ball. He's starting his throwing motion before the receiver's even into his break. And it's that one minuscule moment where there's great separation and they get the ball. Yeah, you get a little spoiled with that.
You do.
The other part of it, I mean, yeah, the Kaimi Fairbairn part, it's not like the Warriors at their peak were scheming just to get Steph Curry a 35-point three-pointer.
You know, like
just because
threes.
He can, just because he can hit one from 38 feet doesn't mean that that's ideally what they're trying to get. You can't bank on that all the time.
Well, and the same people say, like, there's a text here, why not? He's money from beyond 50 yards. That's the same person who, if they played that conservatively and played for a 56-yard field goal and they missed it, they'd be like, how can you play for a 56-yard field goal? So, no, I disagree, sir.
I'm okay with it. I'm okay with the decision. It all comes back to a lot of the issues that I have with Bobby Slowick as an offensive coordinator have zero to do with his play calling. I think his play calling is just fine. It's the problem is they can't execute, and that's on Bobby Slowick. He's not the offensive play caller. He's the offensive coordinator, and the run blocking is not. It's not good enough, and that's on Bobby Slowick.
We'll get to the Circle of Swarm in about probably 7 or 8 minutes here. The weekly Circle of Swarm. Seth and I each pick the three swarmiest Texan players for the upcoming week. Based on performance, recent and year-long.
This time of year, the gear means more. The logo has a season of grit stitched in. The hat brims go low. The jerseys blaze with postseason pride. It's postseason season. This is what players and fans wear to win. Visit MLBShop.com for your favorite team gear and today's special offer. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
As far as the card this weekend goes in the NFL, I like stacking this like a wrestling card. You guys know that. The undercard, for me, the undercard this week, Seth, are the two games involving other AFC South teams I'll keep an eye on. Jacksonville and Chicago in London, two teams the Texans have played already. And then Indy at Tennessee. Tennessee coming off a bye week. Probably a better team than their record if Will Levis just couldn't, would stop throwing pick sixes. And then the Colts, it looks like Anthony Richardson is back for the Colts this week. So I'm kind of hoping for Anthony Richardson to be terrible so we get a little more of that play Joe Flacco vibe that the Cleveland Browns had to deal with last year. That's kind of fun.
This is what I really want of Anthony Richardson is a continuation of what he's done in his career, which is make enough really incredible throws that you continue to be tantalized by the upside Well, maybe underplaying exactly just how erratic and bad he is, not just in his actual throwing, but some of his decision-making. So I need the Colts to really string this out for like three more years.
Yes.
Or just for them to think that, well, if he could just stop getting injured pretty much every third game that he plays in his football career in college or the NFL, that, if we could just get him over that hump. Play four or five consecutive games in a row without getting injured. Yeah.
The mid card for me this weekend, two games, Cleveland at Philadelphia. Yeah, I know it's 1-4 against the Philly team that's shaky right now. The loser of this game, their head coach will be sitting right next to Doug Peterson on the hot seat list. If Kevin Stefanski, and I think Stefanski's actually a good coach, but if they start 1-5 and they're married to Deshaun, If the Eagles lose to 1-4 Cleveland at home, coming off of a bye week, Sirianni is going to be squarely on the hot seat. So this is a hot seat alert game on the mid card.
Yes, this is. You know, there's the beautiful thing about football is that you can find excuses for just about anything.
Yes,
and my favorite thing now these days, where I waste time, is looking at the people who are viciously 100% still in Deshaun Watson's corner, and
we'll
point out.
They're out there.
Oh,
huh?
Yeah. Now, I don't know how many of these are just actual like burner accounts of Deshaun and his staff or not. But yeah, there's other bad things going on the Browns right now. So where you can make excuses enough for Deshaun Watson that, this is Stefanski. With another coach, he'd be just fine. It's just like you got all these other, nobody could operate well under this. I mean, and to be clear, Deshaun is still, there's lots of quarterbacks in the league that have issues with, on their offense and everything, but Deshaun's playing worse than all of them.
All of them.
So, but there's enough people out there making excuses that I think that at some point, Haslam, the owner, who we know will listen to fans, it's the whole reason they drafted Manziel, was they're gonna blame Kevin Stefanski.
Oh, for sure. 1-5, and the schedule does not let up for these guys. The other mid-card game, and I struggle with this one, maybe putting this one further up the card. Washington at Baltimore is a fun. Any game involving the Commanders now becomes a fun game with this offense. So you got Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury heading to Baltimore. It's like a little mid-Atlantic battle. You know, they kind of live on that same little peninsula there. Battle for that capital area of the country, and a little Lamar Jackson versus Jaden Daniels action. That's a fun game right there. Baltimore.
I am. You know, we've never seen Cliff Kingsbury in the NFL as an actual just offensive coordinator, where he's not also having to deal with the responsibilities of being a head coach. Mm-hmm. And Cliff Kingsbury's, probably learned a lot of good lessons from his time in Arizona. I'm very intrigued that this might be it's kind of a rebirth for Cliff Kingsbury if he can keep this up.
It's a good test, man. It's a really good test. Washington at Baltimore. Washington 4-1. Baltimore 3-2.
The way they ran things in Washington, or excuse me, in Arizona with Cliff Kingsbury, it was just from the stories I heard from people that had been there, was that there were just a lot of things Kingsbury did as a head coach that were not like NFL head coach type things.
Yeah.
Like the level of discipline and professionalism and everything within the building, it just wasn't what most successful NFL head coaches do. Cliff Kingsbury with an elder dude over him and an actual NFL coach, and with that maybe kind of guidance and pressure, perhaps, it might be the absolute best thing for Cliff Kingsbury.
So far,
and Jaden Daniels has just been playing. He's just been playing really good football. It's not gimmicky or anything. He's making good decisions. He's accurate. Like, he's doing all of it.
He's everything you'd expect in a number two overall pick, for sure. Semi-main event this weekend, the Lions at the Cowboys. Lions coming off a bye week. Cowboys 3-2 on the season. That game is in Dallas. Dan Campbell going back to where he didn't play in that stadium, I don't think. But, he was a Dallas Cowboy as a player. But Detroit, generally considered to be one of the two best teams in the NFC, I think. Dallas aspiring to be. It's a big game for the Cowboys, man. It's a big, big game at home for the Cowboys. Chance to make a statement.
Whatever. Did you ever follow up on the – people were trying to read CeeDee Lamb's lips as he was yelling at Dak Prescott. And Dak Prescott just kind of stood there and took it, didn't really say anything. Was there validity to that, or was that debunked?
I don't know. I couldn't read the. Here's the frustrating thing about that. Is every tweet that I saw made it seem like it was obvious what CeeDee Lamb was saying.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't say what it was. They're like, oh, boy, look what he's saying. And I'm looking at him like, I can't tell what he's saying.
People were saying it was like mid at best, or they were mid throws. Or yeah, it was, yeah.
And so I honestly, Seth, I stopped caring. It's the Cowboys. Gotcha. You know what I mean? Like, I never did any
we're
detective
work. We're rooting for dysfunction with the Cowboys.
Yes.
Not because it affects us necessarily all that much on a year-by-year basis, but it's just fun to watch.
Main event of the weekend, weird to say, with a game between a 3-2 team and a 2-3 team, but it's Monday Night Football, and I am fascinated to see what the post-Sala, post-Hackett play-calling Jets look like in a game where they are their first game post-firing their coach, and if they win this game at home against the Bills, the suddenly kind of reeling a little bit Buffalo Bills, the Jets will be in first place in the AFC East if they win this game.
I almost wonder whether part of getting rid of Sala, well, like without going into the whole soap opera of Aaron Rodgers and all of that goes, and whether how much input he had, I don't care. We'll never know. I think that Robert Sala, as I told you, I was always a little bit concerned just from the Hard Knocks clips and everything that he might have tried to pit the offense and the defense against each other a little too much. There's a good, healthy competition that you want to have, but I always felt like, okay, the defensive-minded coach, Robert Sala, was just almost rubbing it in the offense's face how good the defense was. And that's dicey. You want guys that are competitive and everything, but you don't want it to start to feel like us against them. Sauce Gardner had a quote where he said basically like, hey, we're still playing for him, for Robert Sala, to do it for him.
Yeah.
And I don't know, man. I wonder, maybe Sala, despite his better, you know, best wishes and better motivations or whatever, was creating a divisiveness there. And maybe it'll be different now. Who knows?
We'll see. We'll see. But that
I like Robert Sala a lot, so it's hard for me to say, but maybe that was an issue.
Are you with me on how compelling that game is on Monday night, just based on everything swirling around the Jets and where the Bills are right now, too?
Yes, because the Jets do have... like on paper, it looks like they could be something.
Yeah.
And so much of it has to do with Aaron Rodgers. Like Aaron Rodgers yesterday said all the right things, said, hey, if I play better, Robert Saleh is still here.
Yep.
Yes, it's very intriguing to me. I love the interim coach bump, especially on a team that looks like they could do something if they turn a few things around.
And they did take play calling away from Nathaniel Hackett.
Yes, that as well. Right, yeah. They did the thing that people thought they should do, and people wondered whether that got Robert Saleh fired or not. At the very end of the day, at least, okay, that change was made.
They almost had to still do that. When the story got out that that's what Saleh was going to do, then they fired him. If they had given play-calling duties back to Hackett, the smoke on Aaron Rodgers would have been an inferno on Aaron Rodgers.
In the morning kowtowing meeting that I'm guessing they have at the Jets, they probably have a 5-minute morning or 5-minute meeting every morning where they're like, okay, how do we kowtow to Aaron Rodgers today? Okay, well, yesterday we kowtowed to him by getting rid of Robert Saleh, who had tried to demote Nathaniel Hackett.
Yeah.
But now it turns out that Aaron doesn't like this heat that he's getting, so we need to pivot and kowtow to him by demoting. Yes,
Nathaniel
this
Hackett.
Is all very good. This is all very good, productive. This is the way a good organ. Yeah, we're good, right, guys? This is the way good organizations operate, right? Okay.
What a mess. What a prison that must be.
Kowtow on three.
Kowtow on three.
The days are getting shorter, but the lights couldn't be brighter. This time of year, baseball is different, and the whole world is watching. All of the clutch hits, the game-saving grabs, the plays at the plate, and the head-first slides under the tag. That's peak baseball. Experience all of the autumn action. It's postseason season. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.